Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
It was the best of times. It was the worst.
She was the people's princess.
Crystal fight on the beaches.
Oh, wait, man. These are the things that made England.
Crystal fight on the landing ground.
These are the things that made England.
I have the body but of a weak and feeble woman.
These are the things that made England.
And a king of England, too.
These are the things that made England.
Cry God for Harry!
And these are the things that made England.
England! And St. George!
These are the things that made England.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Things That Made England. The idea of the show is to decide on what things make England as she is, the country that, despite it all, we feel lucky to be part of. This week, I am presenting Magna Carta as a thing that ought to go in the cabinet of doom, the cabinet of the things that made England. Essentially, the way I saw this episode going, Roy, is I tell you lots of cool stuff and lecture you, and you lap it up. And so at the end, you say thanks. Okay. Is that
you're,
all right?
You're a man who's quite deluded. But go on, sir.
I mean, normally you're really picky. And answer me this, Royfield. What is Magna Carta? Is it a Bill of Rights? It's a Charter of Liberty?
It limits the power of the king. It gives rights to nobles that the king can't just do whatever the heck he wants. And for whatever reason, people in the Anglo-Saxon world have this as a founding document of the rule of law, and you know that the head of state cannot be capricious and do whatever the heck he wants. That's fundamentally it. End of chat. Let's go to the social media roundup.
Have you ever heard of the word succinct?
Yes, and I've just been incredibly succinct, but you are going to blow a hole through that word right now.
Oh, yes.
And you're going to bloviate for another 20 minutes.
So, in actual fact, what it is, it's not a Charter of Liberty, it's not a constitution, it is a peace treaty to end the civil war between King John and the barons. And as a peace treaty, how successful was it on a scale of 1 to 10, Royfield, with 10 being very successful and 1 being not successful at all?
Not very, because John tries to get out of it.
Within weeks, within days, we're talking minus marks. It's called Magna Carta because at the same time, out came something called the Forest Charter, which is the smaller charter. So one is a bigger charter than the other. Three clauses still on the statute books of English law. Although, interesting enough, there was a theory by a legal historian who said that, in actual fact, this predated Parliament, and therefore it's part of common law, which is above statute law, so that Parliament cannot repeal it, and therefore is known as the Inalienable Charter.
Which has an interesting echo about inalienable rights, which is what our American cousins always bang on about.
We will come back to Locke because, yes, he's important. So it wasn't very successful. John declared war on the barons. So what happens to Magna Carta after then? It gets reissued in loads of different versions, actually. It goes out of fashion then. Through the 15th and 16th century, the idea of a barons' revolt being a good idea wasn't very popular politically. Barons what? Oh, we don't want one of those. So it goes out of fashion until we get a chap called Francis Bacon, who is a very famous chap we must do sometime, right at the start of the scientific revolution, changes the study of history very fundamentally. And he starts talking about Magna Carta, not as a peace treaty, not as its importance on the positioning of fishways on the Thames, which incidentally forms a reasonable part of the Magna Carta. He starts talking about it as a statement of liberty and fundamental law. Then you get a chap called Edward Coke, spelt Coke, who's a 17th century jurist. And he then comes out with the thing as the charter as a statement of liberty against the power of the king. Of course, Magna Carta never was a statement of liberty. It was a statement of liberties for nobility. Mm-hmm. Then we get Hobbes and Locke, and they didn't like Magna Carta. So going back to inalienable rights, Hobbes and Locke believed in natural law. So they thought Magna Carta was a bit irrelevant because it stands for the evolution of law based on custom and practice and precedent, that sort of thing. So it goes back again. Then we get Freeborn John, John Lilburn, one of the guys we must also do. Have you heard of the Levellers in the Civil War?
Once or twice. Good band, the Levellers, as well.
Absolutely right. Great band. I went to see them with my daughter. Around about the time of the Civil War, Magna Carta is seen by John Lilburn as the liberty of the whole English nation, he calls it, was in Magna Carta. And at that time, therefore, Magna Carta begins to be exported. So there are a bunch of royal charters establishing English colonies in America.
Can you tell us some of these liberties that the nobles then had?
I will come to that in...
Oh, so we're doing this in reverse order.
Yeah, I'll do that in, a couple of hours? Have you got a pillow?
I always record when I'm recording with you with my head on a pillow, sir. Cup of cocoa to one side, slippers on, and I have a little snooze.
Yeah, just give me a couple of minutes and I will get to that. I'll be very quick. But I mean, it's quite interesting how many of those American colonies have reference to the Magna Carta. So Massachusetts, Maryland, Maine, Connecticut, Rhode Island, for example. The Massachusetts Body of Liberties in 1641, the Virginia Bill of Rights, 1776, the 5th and 14th Amendments of the US Constitutions apparently are all quoted in its language according to the historians. Whether that's true or not, I will wait for somebody to tell me. And then the 19th century Whig historians, Gutsy Potty, of course, you know, Stubbsy and his crew. And it's
Stubbsy and his crew. Wait a minute, this man wrote the Constitution of England. Stubbsy. Right. Pretty important, but it's Stubbsy and his crew.
Exactly right. Oh, you're a sharp chap. Constitutional History of England, the statement of Whig history, essentially. This continual progression from Magna Carta through to the perfect English constitution. So, and then suddenly it all becomes subject to much more historical analysis and, you know, scientific history sort of takes off, as it were. So is it relevant is the question. The point you're basically asking earlier was, is it actually relevant? Is it all cracked up to be? Because it's taken a bit of a beating over the last, I don't know, 100 years. Was that you're asking, or did you want to know about specific rights of barons?
Well, the Whiggish view is that Magna Carta comes about and it limits the power of the king, but we don't actually know what it says. People know that it's important and it's kind of like this founding document on whether it's Australia, New Zealand, America, Canada. They all, their parliaments, their governing bodies all cite Magna Carta to say that folk can kind of do whatever the heck they want to do within reason, and the state can't come down on them like a hammer. But, you know, what exactly was in this
document? Okay, so there is, I mean, I say there's a lot about fish weirs.
That's important.
Yeah. What's important about Magna Carta probably is the principles it enshrined. So, first of all, it enshrined the idea that there is a law higher than the king. So in Magna Carta, a council of 25 barons is set up to adjudicate on any debates between Magna Carta and the king. And it imposes an oath on everyone to that group that is essentially superior to the oath of allegiance to the king. Now, this is a wild concept, completely and utterly unmedieval, unlike, you know, anything going back to anything in the medieval world, certainly.
David, let's stop on this point, right?
Yeah.
And this is where I'm completely utterly deferring to you.
Good. I like
and
that.
Somebody, yeah. Well, I have to on occasion.
You're probably right.
Right, probably because you did a whole load of work on the Anglo-Saxons. I don't mean the Anglo-Saxon world now. I mean the Angles, the Saxons, the Jutes and the Danes, etc. I was always led to believe that when they came over to these hallowed shores in the 6th, 7th, 8th century, that their view of kingship was not our view now, that the king was a king of equals, elected amongst, let's say, the great and the good, and that the writ of the king was not necessarily law, that they did subscribe to, I'm not going to call it common law, but some notion of societal, communal, tribal laws of which the king was subject to as well.
Well, there is a deep within the Germanic tradition is a principle of election. But as you will know, throughout the Anglo-Saxon age, as long as they were a member of the royal family, any of the Athelings could become king. The elective principle doesn't really survive, and there is still this it still has to be a royal family. The concept of lordship is very strong. Nonetheless, there is a principle of consent. So, yes, there is an element there. But what Magna Carta does do is it reinforces the idea of communal rights. So, for example, there's a lovely, there's one which says, no widow shall be compelled to marry so long as she wishes to remain without a husband. Now, this is something that used to happen where a noble woman would negotiate with the king, because the king had the right to enforce a marriage and say, right, you're going to marry this bloke. No argument. And what women would do, what heiresses would do, is they would negotiate and they'd say, look, if I pay 10,000 quid, will you leave me alone? And they'll say, well, I may call it 12 and yeah, all right then. This makes it a communal law. Everybody has that right. It's not a question of how much you negotiate. It's supposed to be a right now. And although the modern view has emphasized the fact this is not about democracy, this is about the barons, not about the common people, actually it includes all free men, not just barons and bishops. And that is unique as well. Oh, that's the first, one of the very early examples of this. I think it's the first, actually. So in 1316, for example, there's a similar charter rung out of Philip V
in France,
and it excluded other classes, you know, specifically said just your nobility. So that is a big thing about Magna Carta. It enforces the idea of communal rights. It is much more than just about the nobility. It's about all free men. And then the third thing, so I mentioned rule, law higher than the king, communal rights. The third thing is this legal stuff about habeas corpus and the jury. You know, so you can't be arrested without charge. You cannot be executed without lawful judgment of your equals. Actually, habeas corpus is probably earlier, and the development of jury service probably takes longer. But the principle is established in Magna Carta that judgment must precede execution. The rule of law, essentially, is what we're talking about. So I lay it before you, Royfield. Those are fundamental principles that Magna Carta embodies.
But just whilst we're here, David, right? I always get my early Plantagenet kings mixed up. Was it Edward I? Who's seen as the founder of the British judiciary? Which king is that?
It's an evolutionary process, but certainly Henry II, who is obviously the father of John, has a big impact on the development of law, and it's the first sort of legal tracts began to be written. But, you know, Alfred had a codex of laws, Canute had Ethelbert of Kent back in the 7th century had a codex of law, Ina of Wessex had a code of law. So codes of laws were, you know, a reasonable tradition.
But it's Henry. So it's Henry that basically says you need to be judged by your peers, and there is a circuit of judges.
Judgment by your peers is in Magna Carta. So no man, free man, shall be seized or imprisoned or stripped his rights. Blah 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 blah. Except by lawful judgment of his equals or by the law of the land. So the idea of so jury. Previously is an indictment process, an investigation process. What's been going on in the locality? Are there any, you know, are there any crimes been happening? That sort of thing. So it is Magna Carta that starts that process of moving to the kind of jury we know now. The principle habeas corpus, which is related, which is the principle that you can't be executed without due legal process. Actually is in the Assize of Clarendon, which I think is pre-Henry II. Actually, I'm going to have to look up the date of that.
1166 is the Assize of Clarendon.
Impressive, off the top of your head, obviously. Nothing to do with Google. No.
Nothing at all. You didn't hear me.
That's true.
Like,
impressive. I'm very impressed. Assize of Clarendon, 1166. So that is Henry II.
Again, so the reason why I asked, and I got my Edwards mixed up with my Henrys, right? But I knew that there was a lot of this is kind of rumbling on beforehand, you know. So, but is it that it's just quite nice and neat for us to say, haha, it was the Wild West beforehand,
yeah.
All of a sudden this great document comes along and okay, really it's about nobles and barons, but the precepts of it then get taken forward to mean kind of all, well, and free men, then becomes all kind of subjects of the king. We're a country ruled by law, blah, blah, blah. But actually, just about everything in it, you can actually see, does actually come slightly before.
There is a value in the Whig view of history. The inevitable progression thing about the Whig view of history is demonstrably tripe. The idea of the English perfect state is obviously demonstrably tripe. But there is an element of truth in the view that things develop and they progress and things build on things. So, no, it wasn't the Wild West before. As I say, there were legal codes that go back to Ethelbert of Kent and Ina of Wessex. Ina is, I know, 8th century. When a new king comes to the throne, often they agree to abide by the legal code of a particular king. Edward the Confessor becomes particularly important in that. So anything which says there's a discontinuity and previously it was X and then after it was Y is probably wrong. What it is, Magna Carta, is a very significant step on the way that later historians built up into something bigger.
Cool. All right.
So it's not that it's irrelevant. It's not that it's not important.
Mm-hmm.
Not as big as some 19th century historians like Stubbsy would have us believe. Nonetheless, it is still very significant.
I think this is one topic that our American listeners will just run riot with. And as a student of American politics and American history, it's hard not to listen to an American politician or historian not intone the Constitution, 1776, etc. The Declaration of Independence, and then the Constitution. And then third behind all that is Magna Carta. And they seem to have a higher reverence for it than we do. Magna Carta doesn't get mentioned in political discourse in the UK the way it does in the US.
It's much rarer, and the 500th anniversary or whatever it was, however many years it was, 800, there wasn't a lot of kerfuffle, was there?
No, not at all.
So I agree, it's interesting, isn't it? It's fallen out of fashion, really. Billy Bragg mentions it from time to time. Mm. Have I mentioned Billy Bragg on every single...
Never.
So, it's been great, and you've loved... I can tell you've loved the lecture, Roy Field. Why not? You could argue with that. But we've come to the decision time. In the end, I must take the honey of debate away from you and say, is it going in?
Well, I think we all know this is going in. I'm surprised, though, that you haven't made a stronger case for it. It seems to me like you basically just says, well, this thing happened, we've all heard of it. People reinterpreted it throughout the centuries.
Okay, well, let me do that bit again then.
It's in.
I mean, the thing about historians is that they're a dull lot and they always reduce things and make them less dramatic.
I don't know about that. There's that woman who does stuff on Channel 4 with a bit of a lisp. She's all right. And I tell you, David Starkey,
yes,
I don't necessarily agree with half of what he says, but he's not dull.
Okay, I mentioned three mega things that Magna Carta does. It establishes the principle that there is a law higher than the king, to which the king is subject. It establishes the idea of communal rights, and therefore the whole community is important, not just the nobility. Mm. And it embodies the principle of the rule of law and that you cannot be imprisoned without trial and the process of law. Those are three, I would say, reasonably big things.
Mm. Right. Awesome. So that's going in then. I do feel this has been a little bit dreary, Dave.
Thank you very much. Thank you so much. You must go into motivational speaking. You'll be brilliant.
Well, thank you. I do feel that I bring the sex to these topics and you bring what you bring.
I've sucked the life out of it. I'm a fun sucker. Excellent. So before we go, Roy Field, fun yes. sucker that I am, we should hear about what the public thought about our last topic, which of course was Margaret Thatcher. And before I do, millions of thanks to Fiona and Luke for rounding up every week. It's absolutely brilliant. And let's have this one now.
Well, well, well. Thatcher proved somewhat divisive. What a surprise. Dear old Maggie, how we miss her so. Actually, even Mrs. Thatch would be preferable to the absolute shower that we have running the country at the moment. and breathe. Not the time nor the place, Luke. Not the time nor the place. As it is, I don't quite know how I'm going to cram all the comments into my allotted roundup slot. Let's start with the voting and see how we get on. Royfield, for possibly the last time, gave us some fairly skewed options to choose from, but left the polling open so we could add our own options to vote for. Royfield's choices were: while fighting every fibre in my body, I must admit that Margaret Thatcher is an English icon, which has 45 votes. Sorry, I can't do it. Regardless of her legacy, I've always been anti-Thatcher and always will be. Maggie, Maggie, Maggie! Out, out, out! Has 20 votes. Then some noble defender of democracy added an option for people who might think the old girl was a good thing, and 20 people have voted for "She was an influential and principled politician who led the United Kingdom out of the dark days of the 1970s and helped win the Cold War." Tiffany has garnered 11 votes for "She is what tried to destroy England." I don't think Tiffany is a big fan. Jacob added an abstain option for which only he and Harvey voted, which tells its own story, I think. And then Catherine added an option that seems to have fallen foul of the word count allowed, and has 3 votes for her. Yes, she is iconic. However, she and Ronnie started the downward spiral of both countries to the xenophobic, almost dictatorships that they... We might never know how Catherine wanted to finish it, but I'm guessing she's not a big Trump fan. In the limited time I now have left, I'm going to have to focus on just some of the more highbrow points that have been raised on our Facebook page. For instance, Jenna shared Nicki Minaj's shout-out for Margaret Thatcher. Like Minaj, Alan sees Maggie as a feminist icon and pulled TTME, as nobody is calling it, up for being blokey and not mentioning the fact that she was a woman, and he shared a fascinating piece by Natasha Walter on the subject. Fiona rode to David and Royfield's defence, no doubt flinging arrows to the left and right, to point out that it had been mentioned, and this sparked off a great discussion on the nature of feminism and leadership. Alan also wrote about the importance of Mrs. Thatcher's Midlands and Methodist background in making her different to so many other prime ministers. One of my favourite comments was from Marilyn, who told us she kept falling asleep because she was enjoying the episode so much she didn't want it to end. It's worth popping over to the Facebook page just to read Marilyn's comments, in fact. There was some other top anti-Thatchering that I much enjoyed, along with Michelle, Tiffany, Keir, Kevin, and many others. Speaking of Keir, and with a name like that, he could only be a staunch Labour man, we have an homage to Maggie in the form of a playlist up on the Facebook group for the delectation of your ears. Homage is one of those words that I can't say without sounding like a bit of a prat, such as latte or schemata. If you like your economic wonkiness, then you need to read Michael's post that comes adorned with a graph, no less. The discussion very swiftly went over the head of this bear of very little brain, but it covers all the good stuff like GDP, monetarist policies, and exchange rates. I think there is no better example of the richness of the exchanges we have on our Facebook group than the discussion that Amy kicked off when she asked whether the American Revolution should go into the cabinet. It is quite some thread with great points raised for and against, including a nice diversion into the nature of teaching of history in the British education system from Callum. I really cannot cover them all here. Best of all, Amy ends it by encouraging the Queen to restore British rule in the United States. What a good idea. I hope that I speak for us all when I say thanks to Royfield and David for a great episode. And I am much looking forward to Magna Carta and beyond.
Brilliant. Absolutely fantastic. And thank you so much again. So, Royfield, that is it. Magna Carta goes into the cabinet, as of course it should do. You had a great time. And that's it for this week.
Listen, I'm just impressed that I knew that the size of Clarendon was 1166. Yes. And to be fair, I only remembered that date because of listening to the History of England. So there you go.
Well, I'd say it's very impressive. Very impressive. All right, everybody. Thank you very much. Let us know what you thought on the website about Magna
Just
Carta.
Just before we go, because in the last episode, you put in a cheeky plug.
I did, didn't I? Sorry about that.
Can I just say, if you want to see the precepts of Magna Carta as a living thing, why don't you listen to the Mid-Atlantic podcast, where I dissect an American hot political topic with an English one. It's Mid-Atlantic. It's a show all about US and UK politics compared and contrasted.
Excellent. Sounds fantastic. A good way of spending a Sunday afternoon. Right. Thank you very much, Royfield. It's enough. Time to go. And everybody will see you next time.
Bye-bye.
And these are the things that made England.
And St. George!
These are the things that made England.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pile-ups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.